So welcome everybody to All About Symbian Insight 79. I'm Steve Litchfield, and with me I have
Rafe Blanford.
Actually, am I allowed back in after last week?
Yes, we love you, Ewan.
Okay, and Ewan Spence. Hello, everybody.
There's not a lot in the way of news, but there's loads of things to actually chat about. First of all, one item, rather specialist, and looking ahead to the future slightly, Symbian to the Power 2, or just Symbian 2, as they like to talk about it. Rafe, what's new with Symbian 2?
The news here is that the first release has happened, basically. And the importance of this is really it's the first proper release under the auspices of the Foundation. And effectively, you can think about Symbian 2 as S60 5th edition Feature Pack 1, although, of course, now that S60 is being done away with, we'll be using the Symbian terminology going forward. So this is Symbian 2.
No.
I know, the marketing ones are screaming in the background. I mean, it's fine. Most people are still calling it Series 60 anyway. But in terms of Symbian 2, what we're really talking about is a refinement to S60 5th edition. For example, some of the things that are standard here as the N97's home screen, the widgets actually become part of the platform rather than a specific add-on. We can also expect a few things like, I think, high resolution support. So in theory, you could go beyond the resolution that you have on the N97 and the 5800. And other than that, it's small refinements. We'll actually hear more about it when we actually get our hands on the release ourselves, which Symbian are promising to put out a beta at some time in the next few weeks. But what this means in practical terms is we'll see the first devices running this software release probably early next year.
Okay.
What struck my mind about this was when you actually look at Symbian's release plan, the fact that Symbian to the Power 2, to the Power 3, to the Power 4, and so on, they're all staggered at 6 months apart, and each of the milestones are 6 months apart. So when one of them is just sort of in alpha, one of them is in, the one behind it is in beta, and the one behind that is at full release, and the one behind that one is starting to get depreciated. And it provides such a regular upgrade pattern from the operating system. So every 6 months, everything jumps over one tick. And I'm going to be very interested to see what that does to the handset market, whether that either increases the churn on the handsets, of the handsets that are coming out of the manufacturers, or whether a device will actually survive through two or three iterations of feature packs. So when you buy a device that starts to say Symbian to the Power 3, you know that it's going to it's guaranteed to last all the way up to the upgrades in Symbian to the Power 5 before it gets depreciated.
The thing to realise here, Ewan, is that Symbian have in fact already been doing this sort of scheduled release in the past. I mean, it wasn't quite the 6 months, but it was certainly not that far off it. And a lot of the stuff was also backported. So things like demand paging and web runtime got backported into earlier releases, effectively making it more like a 6 monthly release schedule. With that said, you know, there is the intention that there'll be more of a chance to upgrade between Symbian releases because there aren't any licensing fees involved, whereas previously, from a legal point of view, you'd have had to pay the license to have another Symbian release to add it to your phone. So I think with some phones, we're actually going to see the ability to upgrade between releases via firmware. That's not going to apply to everything, so we wouldn't see, say, an example from jumping from Symbian 1 to 4, but you might see it go from Symbian 1 to 2 or 2 to 3. It's also important to realise that you can also group these releases together. So Symbian 1, 2 and 3 go together, and then Symbian 4 will actually be something a little apart, and we'll talk a bit more about that later in the podcast when we come on to mentioning Qt. So this is a change in one sense, but it's also what we've had go on before. But yes, it's nice to see this happen. While we're talking Symbian, it's also worth mentioning, I think, that one of the first packages to go from the Symbian Foundation license to EPL has actually been released. And sort of strategically, or you know, as a kind of to make a point, they've made this the Symbian the security package. So that's the things that control things like cryptography within the phone, which is very widely used in the OS for obvious reasons. So that's now in the public domain, and that's the first package, I believe, that's gone from the Symbian Foundation license to the Eclipse public license. So Symbian are well on the way to their sort of roadmap of getting it fully into EPL by 2010.
Yeah. One bit of news that turned out not to be news from this week is that The Guardian, that well-known paragon of technical knowledge, they always get everything right. They claimed they had an industry insider who that Nokia were going to bring out an Android phone in the spring. This sounded like complete BS to me, and Nokia came out fairly promptly the next morning with a Reuters statement saying this is not going to happen at all. What was your take on this, Rafe, and where do you think they got confused?
Well, I was on holiday when this story broke, and I saw it when I checked into All About Symbian. I think you had it absolutely right. I mean, there is no way this is going to be true. I mean, Nokia just is not going to be working with Google, at least at the platform level, in the foreseeable future. There may be some convergence around agreements on APIs, particularly in the web runtime space. But in terms of platform, just it's really quite scary that kind of news can get picked up and, as you said, passed around via Chinese whispers. I think probably where some of the confusion, as you rightly said, does come from sort of the upcoming MAMO release, which is going to be MAMO 4. And what we're going to see there is the move from MAMO being just for internet tablets to being for phones as well. You know, people are talking about this replacing N series and Symbian at the high end. I think the story is a little more complicated than that, in that, you know, labeling things as high end, mid-tier, low end, you know, is a oversimplification of what the market is. What we're going to be seeing here is MAMO sort of in the, Nokia have been calling it the platform for mobile computers. And I think that's where we'll see it fit in. It's going to be very much touch dominated. And actually, it's nearer the space occupied by things perhaps like the iPhone, which, you know, they're tablet-esque PC-led devices, rather than the phone-led devices we typically get from Symbian. And this sort of ties in with the convergence between the laptop and the smartphone, where we're seeing terms like smartbook come out, or the mid-devices. And so MAMO is going to be playing in that space, and is sort of more specifically designed for it, to do with some of the architecture. We've already seen the strategic alignments with Intel on some of the chipset stuff, and also the open source release for Ofono. And so that's, I suspect, where the confusion for this came from. And so in terms of Linux, Nokia's bet is on MAMO rather than Android. But even looking at MAMO, it's unclear exactly how Nokia intends to use it. And part of it is, there are actually platforms that are capable of sort of filling this space. And Intel are betting on Moblin. To an extent, Microsoft would like to push Windows Mobile, but also desktop Windows in terms of netbook computers into this space. Google just talked about the Chrome OS. So this is sort of a new space that is emerging between the convergence of mobile phones and laptops, with the sort of internet being spiced and thrown into it. Yes, it is effectively a new kind of category of hardware, but the reality is, of course, it's really all one continuum from your basic phone all the way up to your computer. And because we're talking about smart OSs and all that kind of thing, and this convergence of web coming into it, it becomes quite complicated to how exactly you address this space. And I think I'll probably be writing more about this, because there's a lot of confusion around where exactly this is all going to fit in Nokia's platform strategy. But the basics of it are that Nokia is using MAMO, which is based on Linux, to address this kind of convergent space, which mobile phones like the N97 also sort of start moving in towards. And Symbian Foundation also wants to be in that space. They've talked about running Symbian on a netbook, for example, but there's going to be plenty of other competitors, and Android's also in there for this netbook space, and as I say, Google announcing Chrome. And the fact that there's so many players perhaps gives you an idea that the space isn't very well defined yet, so people don't know exactly what's going to be needed. And the reality is we'll probably see a mixture of everything. People are talking about Nokia abandoning Symbian, which is quite frankly ridiculous to even suggest. It's probably fair to say that there will be an emphasis on pushing Symbian down Nokia's portfolio, sort of eroding some of the space that Series 40 occupies. But there, you're still going to see the high-end S60 devices, particularly for the non-touch phones, which we've already commented in the past are going to make up the majority of the market for at least the next few years. And going beyond that, I would imagine they're still going to be very important. And S60 completely dominates that space in the consumer market. RIM is the only other real player there. Maybe Windows Mobile a little bit, but certainly no one else.
Yeah.
And S60 is probably 80% market share there, 75%, I'd have to check the figures. So that's where Symbian is going to be important. But to say it's not going to play in this touch space is not true, because one of the things that's come out this week is Nokia's sort of cute strategy. And what we've seen here is two things. Nokia said that MAMO is going to move away from using, make sure I get the terms right here, Hilden and GGK on MAMO, and is going to convert over to QT as kind of the the UI layer, what it's based on. And actually the same thing is happening for Symbian. A couple of weeks ago they had the feature roadmap council as well as the UI council, and Qt has been adopted as a base for Symbian going forward, along with Orbit and Direct UI, which we've talked about in the past. And that's basically the next generation of touch UI from Symbian. And I would stress this at the moment is just touch and also hybrid devices, i.e. touch plus keys. And so that's actually what we're going to see in Symbian 4, which I mentioned earlier in the podcast. And that's why there's going to be a break at Symbian 4. And that's where we'll see the big UI changes from Symbian. And that's probably, I mean, we're talking about the end of 2011, really, for that. And until then, we're going to see sort of iterations on S65th edition. And obviously, S63.2 is going to keep going as kind of the non-touch UI. So as I said, it's quite difficult to pen all these things down because there's a lot of change happening at the moment. And we'll try and keep you up to date with the developments as far as we can on All About Symbian, both from a Symbian point of view, but we're also going to be talking about MAME and the other platforms because it's where a lot of the interest in the sort of mobile phone space is at the moment.
Yeah, yeah. Ewan's itching the back channel to get started on our main rant stroke discussion topic for the day. I'll do that, but remind me before we finish, Rafe, to plug a couple of competitions we've got running. So get your notes ready on that. What's happened? Robert Scope, a well-known tech blogger across the industry, has put basically a rant on his blog saying that Europe and Nokia are miles behind the Americans. And I'll just give you a few brief, pithy quotes for people who haven't got the article to hand. This is Robert Scoble, not talking, not me. Europe started buying its own hype, and today its citizens are stuck using phones that are way behind those from Google, Apple, and Palm. Here's where my own observations in London's Tube come in. The UK is stuck on texting. That's all I see most people do with their phones. Nokia simply does not understand how important the web is. In San Francisco and New York, we already know that the web is more important than texting. But that's partly because we just skipped the whole texting thing because our cell phones sucked so much for so long, and because we were ahead of Europe in computer per citizen ratios for so long. Nokia needs to use its leadership in cameras and hardware to really bring a better information experience to its users. The Symbian challenge is to start over and build a UI that needs no clicks to do a bunch of tasks. Getting to the web browser today requires too many frustrating clicks. And to build a new data display that can bring us the real-time world that Facebook, Twitter, and FriendFeed are pushing at us. Before I let Rafe and Ewan in, just one comment there. I don't think Robert Scoble's really learned how to use S60. If it takes him too many frustrating clicks to get to the web browser, then he hasn't bothered even setting up the most basic aspects of the S60 interface. I do agree with one aspect, that coping with Facebook, Twitter and FriendFeed and Web 2.0 is something that Nokia and S60 Symbian licensees are going to have to address as well as Palm have done in, with their WebOS. So that's something that will have to be addressed. But I just disagree with most of the rest of what Robert Scoble's just said.
I would like to put a very small modifier on his article where it says us and the world, where if he could change it to say me and Robert, then it would be fine. how people in certain areas use their phone is different to people in other areas. Right now, if you were to take a phone by myself, set up by you, Steve, and you, Rafe, they would be completely different. Even if we both set up the same phone, people use their phones in different ways. To say that your way is better than the highway is just really bad discussions. One of the things that Nokia has always went on about is customization. So things like themes like desktops, your icons, and how you use your own phone. Now, I'm pretty sure that most of the default setups on the home screen for S60 have the web browser in that top icon bar, so he's two clicks away. So I'm not quite sure why two is too many clicks for Robert. But this comes down to an argument that is seen time and time again. There are geeks who are very loud and very vocal and write about their favorite devices, and we have to put ourselves in that category as well, I'm afraid. And then there are people in the real world. What Robert's essentially saying here is people in the real world use text a lot. That's wrong. Well, not for them it isn't. People who are using texting are using it because they're using the phone for what they want it, which is to communicate in two directions. They use text. Robert, you use FriendFeed. You did use Twitter, and then you stopped using Twitter and went back to blogging because you thought Twittering was taking up too much of your own time. So that's a little bit of pot calling the kettle black, because this is going in history, so I'm going to skip it all. But basically, he left Twitter because it was too much of a time sink and it wasn't helping him work. I suspect somebody there is then saying, well, these phones should all use Twitter, is just trying to raise up an argument here and to get attention, which he's done. But again, it brings into this contrast of, you know, people who use high-end devices and write about them a lot aren't necessarily the target market. The 5800, I seem to remember by a lot of people, especially American Combinators, was poo-pooed. Yet, it's selling as many now as an iPhone. It's probably selling more than the iPhone. It's the biggest selling MP3 player and music player that's on a mobile on the planet. Yeah, it's poo-pooed by lots of people who aren't looking at the who are the people buying it. How many people are buying it? Is it a mass market device? Yes, it's a Palm Pre mass market device where it can barely sell 100,000 units in its first month. No, the iPhone, okay, it's sold a million on the 3GS, but remember, most of the iPhones were on two-year contract, and everybody's up for renewal anyway, so Apple went, well, here's the new one. It's the continuing sales. It's the sales that are going to carry on driving forward. It's the month-on-month-on-month sales that matter.
Yeah, and I wanted to just return to the point about the mass market. And if you talk about the browsing the web being more important than texting, that's what Robert Scoble's saying. I have to say, for 99% of people who use mobile phones in this world, texting and communication via voice are far more important than browsing the internet. My wife has a Nokia E51. She's a pretty typical, a modern professional. She's a teacher. She has this smartphone in her hands, and she uses four or five functions fairly regularly. The web browser is not one of them. She never even goes into the mobile internet. She has no interest in that whatsoever. The high super-end power geeks, they love saying, okay, yes, I've got the full web on my phone. But so what? 99.9% of people don't actually want that. They don't need that. They've got far more targeted, specific needs for their life.
I can get the full BBC web on my web browser on the phone, but I don't go to it. I go to the low-end text-only version because what I want is information.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, and when you go to the BBC's website in web on any Symbian phone, in fact, on most mobile phones, the BBC's website isn't clever enough to automatically serve up a mobile version with small thumbnail graphics because it comes up a lot faster. Shall I carry on, Rafe, or do you want to jump in?
I think I'll say something here. I mean, I think you've covered it very well, and everyone's entitled to their own opinion, but this is something I think we see a lot in tech commentary, and it's very important to understand that the mobile world is just like any other industry. You know, the world is a village, and within that village there are many houses, and within each house there's many rooms, and most people just sit in one room for the most of their life, or in their working life, their personal life. And they understand that room very well, but looking outside that room can become more difficult. And in a country, we see a great, you know, deal of variety. And without, you know, then maybe you look at the wider market, Europe, you see a lot of variety within Europe, you know, the difference between the UK and Italy, for example, in the way they use SMS and MMS. And then that gets even bigger when you sort of look on the continental scale between Japan and Europe, or Europe and the US. And I think it's very important to have the perspective of looking at the whole village, or the whole world, if you like, when making these kind of you know, arguments on the industry level. And it's not to say that, you know, Apple and Palm and Android have been very innovative. They have been, and certainly they've been breaking new territory, all of them. But relatively speaking, they've just been doing it in a couple of rooms, in, you know, a few houses. And the difference is Nokia is a company that tries to address the whole village, every room in every house. And you have to when you look at Nokia, you have to understand it in that context. So, you know, people talk about, you know, Symbian being old and out of date. You know, on the presentational level, on the UI, you can make that argument. You know, with touch devices, is Symbian behind? It's a perfectly valid argument for a certain group of people, but some people prefer the way, you know, S65th edition is done, hence the success of the 5800, because other factors come into it, and that's things like price, design, you know, where you can get it from in terms of operator restrictions. But there's also an awful lot of people who aren't even interested in touch, and we've already talked about S60's success in this podcast elsewhere. And from a technical point of view, if you look underneath the UI, Symbian is still far more advanced as an OS than any of the other platforms out there. You know, the degree of integration and the level of technical complexity within Symbian, both now and going forward, will for quite some time mean that Symbian is ahead in technical terms. Now, does that always translate in stuff for the user? Well, no, the answer is obviously not on that, but it does have some interesting implications for things like price. There's a reason that in the UK, you know, all the top draw phones you talk about, like, and it'll be the same when the Palm Pre comes out, the iPhone 3GS now, the N97, some of the top Windows mobile devices from HTC, they're typically cost around £500. They're on £35 per month contract for, you know, 18 or 24 months. But most people don't buy that bigger contract. And then you look at a device like the 5800 or the E63, it's available on 3 for £15 a month. You get unlimited texts and you get unlimited internet, all for just £15 a month, and the device is free. And there's a big contrast between those two. And at the moment, the market is still within that sort of, the price is still very important, and that will be true going forward. Now, I don't doubt the importance of sort of instant search of Twitter, of Facebook going forward, and it will become more so, but it is a very restricted market. And if you took the whole population and said, right, I'm going to take Twitter or Facebook out of your phone, or the other option is you can take voice calling or text out of your phone, of course the vast majority would choose to get rid of Twitter and Facebook because text and voice is far more important to them. So I think it's important to have a grasp of the whole market and realize, although the trends we see at the cutting edge are the ones that will trickle down in time, you have to realize not all of those will trickle down, and it takes a considerable amount of time for that to happen. So yes, in 10 years time, maybe Steve's wife will be using the mobile internet because it'll be doing what she wants it to do, but at the moment doesn't need it. And I think that applies for most people. And yes, it's perfectly fair to say that in some places Nokia is behind, but in other places you can say it's way ahead. You know, look at its strength in markets like India and China compared to Apple and HTC and Palm. And actually, in one sense, you could say that Europe and the Americas don't really matter because they're relatively small markets if you set it against Asia of the future. So I think it's dangerous to make these kind of sweeping generalizations, which is why when we do commentary on All About Symbian, is we try and present an opinion rather than the fact that this is the right way of looking at it. You just have to have the perspective, understand the context. So, you know, Robert, I think, is very well, you know, he's very well able to speak to the sort of Silicon Valley and the geek audience, but there's a lot more to it than that.
And let's be honest here, the old point of an old interface, well, the iPhone interface is just the Apple Newton in color, which predates Symbian by at least 4 or 5 years in S60. So, design and price, I was writing down counter-arguments here, and right, you've picked up most of them. Design and price, yes. There's also the fact that I think Apple actually dropped the ball. If Apple really had wanted to make a difference, they would not have went with a network provider as with AT&T as they did in America. They would have made a device you could have bought on its own that didn't have to kowtow to do what a network wanted, to be in that very big assembly hall that's in between all the rooms. You have to have a relationship with the operators, with the consumer, as the manufacturer. Apple could have just went, we don't need the operators, we're just going to sell it, you buy airtime, you put a SIM card in it, and we can do the phone however we like. But they didn't. They decided to join in and use the same structures as everybody else. They had the chance to really change the market. They decided to fake changing the market. They didn't even put texting or MMS in the first phone, and it took them 2 years to do that, and then it was the great big new feature. That's just poor. And yeah, things will trickle down. GPS is trickling down. NFC really hasn't trickled down. The idea of having your communicator so it could open completely flat, which the 9500 didn't do, which focus groups asked for, which the 9300 and E90 could do, has been lost again on the N97. So things trickle down until they're not needed anymore. And there was a point to what I was trying to say there, and I've forgotten it. I'm going to go gloss over it and go on to the next one, which is context. You know, America finds Seinfeld funny. Most of Britain doesn't. You know, most of Britain thinks, are you being served, is understood. And when the actress who played Mrs. Slocum died, we all did a tribute to Mrs. Slocum's pussy. America decided that this was spam and banned it off Twitter and created a great big hoo-ha about British porn invading their American islands of social media. Just because something works in one place doesn't mean it works somewhere else. Just because Scoble works in San Francisco doesn't mean he works in Europe.
But it's interesting, he does have a very influential tech audience that listens to him. So it is important to
kind of... Yes, but so does Lily Allen.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I was going to say it depends which audience you're in. The other thing I just want to pick up on, do you know why that Apple went with AT&T in the end?
They didn't have any letters between B and Z?
Well, it's basically a commercial argument, and Apple could have been completely revolutionary, and it's probably the sort of thing that Google would do when they're not really caring about money. But, of course, it always comes down to the bottom line.
And follow the money.
Exactly. For the way Apple wanted to get to market, they had to go with AT&T. But this does also have all the sort of restrictions you apply. But this is sort of the argument that's most frequently forgotten by tech bloggers, is we live in a commercial world and things are driven by commercial forces. And so while that has a certain amount of success for, you know, Apple and their high-end devices have high-end profit margins, they tend to ignore the rest of the market. And so commercial realities often don't always align with the desires of geeks and, you know, tech lovers, and I think that's important to remember. And, you know, we've already mentioned it, but the 5800 is an example of that. You know, it doesn't necessarily have the specs that has everyone going, oh, I want that phone, but its pricing at sort of £200 SIM free in the UK makes it the most makes it the cheapest sort of touch smartphone on the market, and that, you know, that sells, because pricing at the end of the day is one of the most sensitive factors when you're buying a phone for the majority of people. And so commercial reality needs to be looked at in all of these arguments. It's the thing I always try and keep in mind. You know, I'm guilty of wanting the, you know, shiniest, the newest phone, but commercial reality is often very different. And, you know, that comes in things like operator requirements, something that both Android and Apple will struggle with in the future, that Symbian has struggled with in the past and is pretty much fixed now. And those kind of commercial requirements will come back and be very important, but aren't always immediately obvious.
Yeah, and besides, we're just apologists anyway, remember?
Oh, Rafe is. I'm not an apologist. Well, I love the bit in Robert's blog post where he talks about using the Symbian interface requires too many frustrating clicks. I think it's important to put this into perspective. On something like the iPhone, which is the device he's championing, that in actual fact, there are just as many operations. They may be swipes across the screen or taps rather than clicks, but there's just as many operations to do day-to-day work. Here's an example. Let's say you're playing a game on the iPhone. Very common. It's a great games device.
Maybe suggest flight control.
It will indeed. Or real racing. So it's a great, great iPhone game, and you want to check your calendar. So you press the applications button.
One.
And you press it again to get back to the first screen of applications, which is where calendar is. You tap on calendar. You check your calendar. Then you have to go. You're counting you.
Yes.
Right. Then you just go swipe, swipe, swipe.
5, 6, 7.
Swipe after pressing the home screen one more time. 9. And then finally you're back to the screen where your game was. Then you can tap 10. It. And then the game has 11. To load from scratch, which might take another 10 seconds. So we're up to about 10 or 11 swipes or actions. And the whole operation is probably taking closer to 20 or 30 seconds. On the S60, for example, or something running Symbian OS, you are running your game. You want to check your calendar. So you press and hold the applications key, and there's your calendar and one of the running applications. You simply
2, 3,
tap,
4.
Tap, tap, maybe 2 or 3 taps, and you're on the calendar. Up instantly, you check your calendar, you press and hold the applications key again, and there's your game, which is the application you're most recently in, and it's there in the running applications, probably one click of the D-pad, and you're back into the game, and it's still running the place where you left it. So probably 2 or 3 less operations, and probably half the time, maybe even a third the time, in terms of time wasted around the UI. So I simply do not hold with this iPhone UI versus S60 UI, one being much faster than the other. The iPhone UI, when they didn't have any applications, third-party apps, just one screen of apps, then it was probably faster because there you didn't have so far to go. Now, most iPhone owners like me, I've got an iPod Touch, and I've literally filled it. I've got 140 applications. And if I'm on the 9th, application screen, and I want to get back there from the first home screen, I've got to swipe with my finger 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. It takes 10 seconds near enough to get to that place just so I can start tapping on the icon so I can start launching the application all over again because it was closed down because I went to do something else. So these interfaces are always a swings and roundabouts. Some interfaces are better for other things. And in the real world, with a certain amount of functionality, a certain number of applications, there really isn't going to be any definitive winner. So I simply do not believe what Scoble says here, and I think he's just spinning words to try and make a point.
I think that's right, and this proves a very good point, that the UI is only as good as the circumstances on which it depends. I mean, personally, I think that doing pure measurements in terms of number of click metrics can be a bit misleading about how good or bad a UI is, because obviously on non-touch devices you tend to have more clicks, on touch devices you have more, but you also have to consider factors like, is it one or two handed, and obviously as Steve is doing there, the ability to multitask. So it's, it's complicated to say one thing's better or worse than the other. I mean, I've seen this comment that, the iPhone can load things quicker, and the 3GS is undoubtedly a snappy device, and when I saw it, I have to say I was impressed. But equally, all the more recent Nokia devices have been pretty quick as well. For example, you look at the step up in browser performance between S63.2 and S65th edition, and actually the 5800 and the N90, the 5800 actually almost outperforms the N97 in browser terms because the hardware is better integrated on the 5800 than it is on the N97. And the 5800 is actually, it's a bit slower than the 3GS, but it's faster than the plain iPhone 3G. That is down to sort of processor technology, but they're both very much quicker than sort of the older devices, the original iPhone and S63.2. And so you can pick out any one thing and find performance or UI issues, and things like kinetic scrolling get a lot of time and how bad things are on S65th edition. I'm the first to say it has its foibles, but also having the familiarity with traditional phone UIs, like an S60 being the obvious one, is also a strength to some people who are more familiar with that kind of thing, And kinetic scrolling is great if you understand it, but as we've just seen there, it can be very irritating to move across multiple screens or moving up and down the web browser a lot. And you compare that against a scroll bar, which everyone, of course, is familiar with. Personally, on S65th edition, I think they need to increase the target size of the scroll bar when you're putting your finger on it. But it's not, it's not ever a simple case of this is better or that's better, because you have to understand it. And, you have to and this is a problem that Nokia face, of course, when addressing the whole market, is it has to choose the solution that works out as being best overall when you average out across everybody. And that sometimes means some of the solutions it choose don't always fit a market as well as it could do if they were optimizing for everything. And there's that balance between customizing for one small group versus the obvious cost savings if you standardize things across an entire platform. I think this argument could run and run and run.
So thank you very much, Mr. Robert Scoble. You have completely monopolized this week's All About Symbian Insight podcast.
Which admittedly was one where there wasn't a lot of news happening, as we said at the top of the show. So we might have got away with it.
Although not strictly news, we must get a few things in before we finish. Rafe, you've got a number of competitions running. And what can people win and what do they have to do?
You must fare home.
The first one to mention is a competition that's running on All About Symbian right now. Which is to win a Nokia N96. Woo!
No, it's just good. With version 30 firmware, the N96 is actually pretty decent. I'm going to stick up for it here.
No, I like the N96 as well. It's a very nice device. I appreciate it's not everyone's cup of tea. But anyway, a chance to win this, plus a license for $1 million poker.
Oh!
Plus a Nokia goodie bag. And this is all to celebrate the release of $1 million poker. And we've teamed up with Nokia Engage to do this giveaway. And if you go to allaboutsymbian.com/site/mdpcomp.php. It's also featured on the homepage. You just have to answer a simple question and give us your contact details, and you could potentially win an N96. And I've just had a quick look at the entrance, and just going past about the 700 mark now, but there's still pretty good odds compared to some of the competitions out there. The other two I wanted to mention are for developers. One is from Vodafone. They're doing their Summer of Widgets competition. The details are on betavine.net. And the reason I'm mentioning that is because I'll be one of the judges in that competition, but it's also a chance to use your widget development skills to win a bit of prize. In this case, it's an N96 and a Samsung NC20 netbook. Also, Samsung Mobile Innovator are looking for widgets for their i8910 phone. This is a TouchWiz interface with the widgets that you can add onto the phone, and there's some significant cash prizes. I think £20,000 or £10,000, £8,000 and £5,000 for the first three placements. All the details you need are on Samsung Mobile Innovator. That's innovator.samsung.com. And I'd recommend you check that out because that's also going to apply to some of the other Samsung devices. And it's always good to get in the ground floor on these kind of things. And there's a pretty attractive cash prize there as well. So if you've been developing widgets, it's, of course, pretty easy to port between web runtime, the Opera web runtime, and Samsung's own version of widgets because they all use HTML and CSS. You may have to tweak the packaging and maybe some of the layout, but well worth investigating. So there's three competitions for you to go and check out.
All right. Thanks, Rafe. I think we're running out of time, guys. Thanks to Mr. Scoble again. So, but we'll save some of the items we've got planned. We were going to talk about, and we'll save those for next week, just in case there's another slow news week. We are heading into the summer, of course. And for a start, most of Scandinavia seems to be on holiday. But we'll be here, rest assured. I'm Steve Litchfield, and I'll be here. Also, goodbye from...
Rafe Blanford.
And goodbye and from...
me, Ewan Spence.
Oh, there we go. All right. Thanks, guys, and we'll see you all next week.